That we are doing is from Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12, and it is it's the beginning of the chapter, but it's the end of Chumash Bahalescha, of Parshas Bahalescha, and it is the story of Miriam, as we were talking about, and how she spoke to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu, because, well, obviously it was done with good intention, and her severe punishment. And today, we'd like to continue and to see what happened. So we mentioned that she spoke to Aaron. We mentioned that Hashem right away got listened, heard, and he wasn't so impressed. And we mentioned how the Chumash gives us this pasuk to before it even starts to tell us about Moshe Rabbeinu and why he's unique, to tell us how humble he was. That's the first thing it highlights. And we said the context of that is because Hashem knew that Moshe would not stand up for himself. And therefore Hashem said, I will stand up for him, and I will show that whatever Moshe Rabbeinu is doing is not only correct, but he's doing it because I directed him to do it. So he's following orders, and he is the most faithful servant, and the most faithful leader, and the most faithful prophet, and the highest level of prophecy is given to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we'll see today. And therefore, what you are saying, Miriam, doesn't make any... doesn't hold water. And this is what we will find today, and then her punishment. Okay, so I just want to clear this up so I can, Okay, I hope everybody can hear me, right? You can, I hope so. Hopefully. Okay, no, not. Yeah, okay, you can hear, right? So I'm going to share the screen, and we'll start. Okay, so we read, I know you have two booklets in front of you. One of them is the Psukim, and the booklet with the Psukim, we did some of them, so we won't repeat those Psukim. I just want to go straight to Pasuk Dalet. In the art scroll, Pasuk Dalet, which is page 100, and let me just see here. It starts on page 137, the first word, Vayayimer, but then it'll go to the next page. I'm just asking, Louise, can you hear me? Okay, good. Thanks. Just want to make sure. Okay, beautiful. Okay. Because there were so many questions and a few questions that bothered me a little bit, not bothered me, but that I want to understand. One of them was, why such a harsh punishment? She got leprosy, and she's so well-intended, in the sense. But also, what's interesting with the story is that Miriam is speaking to Aaron. Remember, we mentioned. And the focus is all on Miriam. But Aaron does play a role in the story. And that's interesting to figure out what his role is and why seemingly he doesn't get punished. That's what we want to understand also. It's always like that, eh, Daisy, from the beginning of time. But let's see, we'll understand today. And also to understand why is it that Miriam Taka didn't understand that there was such a difference. So we'll see today something fascinating. And we just take it for granted because we've heard it before. But we have to pause for a moment and realize that we're talking about Miriam and Aaron, who are both prophets and prophetesses. And as we said last week, they even started from a younger age than Moshe Rabbeinu. So to them, prophecy is not a foreign thing. It's like, it's as familiar as anything. And what's difficult for them to understand is that there's a different level of prophecy, because obviously they don't know such a thing exists until Hashem points it out to them here. And why is that? Again, because Moshe Rabbeinu, despite the fact that he had been living a whole different experience than they had ever experienced, had never shared it with them out of his humility. So you see that Moshe, what's fascinating is that Moshe is experiencing something day in and day out, and even the people who are closest to him can't even realize how amazing it is. So it's quite, even that is incredible to keep that in mind. I think part of the lesson, and we'll see later, this is one of the things that we are commanded to remember constantly, is one thing is the Lashon Hara aspect, but the other one is to realize that no matter what you think you know about somebody else, even the people who are really close to you, you perhaps are not evaluating them correctly. Mm-hmm. They might be much deeper, much more, there might be much more to them and to their story than we will ever understand. And that's something also important to keep in mind as we read. And you can see, and we're talking about somebody, Miriam, who's, like we said, almost like a second mother to Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's not just that she loves him, she cares for him, but she has that nature where she understood people, and even she didn't get it. So it's also a very powerful, important perspective for us to always remember. Okay, so let's see the Pesukim here. So scrolling, and... So, well, I think what I'm going to do now is just read the Psukim and the Rashi, just to keep it simpler, and then we'll see some of the commentaries. This way we'll just keep it in the pages as we go along. Okay, so 137, it says, Vayomer, the last word in Pasuk, the first word in Pasuk Dalit, so Vayomer, now Vayomer Hashem. Oh, so now, remember, they had been speaking, and all of a sudden they hear Hashem's voice. Vayomer Hashem Pisaim. And that's an interesting word. In Hebrew we say pit'om. What does pit'om mean? Yeah, so I know, it's interesting, it's both actually. Usually we say suddenly. So the truth is over here, let's first say suddenly. There's another way to explain it. Perhaps you can say unexpectedly, suddenly, or quickly, like it comes out of, like, hastily. Good morning, good morning. So all these three different ways are the way we can explain it. El Moshe, who is Hashem speaking to? This is interesting. Not only to Miriam and Aaron, do you see who he's speaking to? Moshe, ve'el Aaron, ve'el Miriam. And what does he say to all three of them? Moshe might have been aware, we're not sure. According to some opinions, he did overhear. According to some opinions, he didn't overhear. But he wasn't part of the story, really. He was just the one, the object they were speaking about. And yet Hashem tells him as well to do what? To u'shloshtechem, right? So this is on page 138. Go out, the three of you, el oyhel mayet, to the Mishkan, v'yetzu shloshtam, and the three of them went out. Okay, so they're all going out of from where they are, and they're coming to meet in the Mishkan. Let's see what Rashi says, something interesting. First of all, pisaim. Rashi says, suddenly, as we said, nigla aleim pisaim, he appeared to them suddenly. And why is that? So this is part of Hashem's way of teaching a lesson. He does it experientially. He's giving them the lesson, and they are experiencing it at the same time. What is the lesson? Let's see. He's trying to show them that what they are saying is not correct, that Moshe had no choice. He had to separate, right? Because he's different than you guys. And what is it that about him that makes it different? So let's see what he says. So he shows, V'heim t'meim b'derech eretz. Aaron and Miriam were impure, as they say, through the way of the world. In other words, through marital relations. Okay, so he's giving them a dose of their own, because they were saying, why does he have to separate from his wife? So Hashem shows them, as we know, because Hashem appeared to Moshe anytime. He had to always be ready. And here, look, you guys are not ready. So right away, as you can see, they become very flustered. And it says, Rashi describes, v'hayutzayakim, and they were crying, mayim, mayim, water, water, with which to purify themselves. L'haydiyam, why? Because Hashem put them in this situation to make known to them, sheyafe asa Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu acted properly, sheperash min ha'isha, in that he separated from his wife. Why? Me'achar shenigles olav ha'shechina tadir, because he gets a revelation of the Shechina all the time, constantly, with no warning, with no time to prepare, and therefore he has to always be ready. Ve'ein eis kvua ledibor, there is no fixed time for Hashem's speech to him. Interesting, not only is there no fixed time for Hashem's speech to him, but you'll see there's no fixed time that Moshe speaks to Hashem. It's like he has like this direct line, you know, back and forth. And therefore, he is very different to any mortal that you've ever met. Already, there's something amazing here. You see, Miriam wasn't aware. Already, you see, that's interesting. Now she already starts to see, oh my gosh, this is a whole different kind of experience than what we have ever had. And now Hashem will say it more clearly. Let's see. And he wants to give them exact instruction. What's taka different? But what happens? Vayered Hashem ba'amud anan. Hashem descends in a pillar of cloud. As we know, that's how Hashem sometimes appeared. Vayamoid pesach ha'ayel. And he stands at the entrance of the Mishkan. So up until now, they heard the voice of Hashem. Now Hashem's presence has descended. Interesting, and where does he do? He calls them, because as they had been told to go to the Mishkan, they did. But he calls out, Vayikra Aaronu Miriam. He calls out specifically to Aaron and Miriam, and he tells them, Vayetu Shneim, that they have to leave. So in other words, first all three go to the Mishkan, but then he separates Miriam and Aaron from Moshe, because he's about to say something important, and they leave the Mishkan just right at the entrance. It seems to be one of the reasons that's done this way is quite dramatic, is also because you realize until now, Obviously, Miriam and Aaron were speaking privately. Nobody knew about it. Now, the Jewish people see something happening. The cloud comes. First, they see the three of them rushing to the Mishkan. Then they see the cloud descending. Then they see Miriam and Aaron come out. So they know something is up. Moshe is still in the Mishkan. These two are out. So Hashem wants them to be aware. And now, what is Hashem going to say? So let's just see first Rashi. We're going to come back to a few very nice points, but I think it's simpler to do it this way. But Amud Anan, so Rashi says, Yotza Yechidi. He went out by himself. In other words, who are we talking about? Hashem. This is interesting. It's a general concept about Hashem, that Hashem appears, it seems to be by himself. What does it mean by himself? So we know, obviously, Hashem is not anything compared to any human or anything, but still, we always say Hashem is like the King of Kings. And we know, how does a king appear to us? Never on his own, always with the whole entourage, right? And even a politician, they have protection, they have security, they also are careful about their honor, somebody goes before, make sure everything's all right. Here we see Hashem comes out by himself. Why? And he says something very interesting, because there are times that Hashem does come with an entourage. He does. Do you remember one famous time that he came with a lot of fanfare? When did Hashem appear with a tremendous fanfare? Well, that actually we all experienced. There was one time at Matan, the only time we really all, at Matan Torah, when Hashem gave us exactly on Mount Sinai, it says that he came out with all the angels and right, and besides, I mean, all the drum roll of the thunder and the lightning, but there was also the angels, the malachim that came. There he comes out with his whole army, with his whole everything. But over here, he comes out by himself. Very interesting. So Rashi points out something very beautiful. He says, Hashem is not like a king of flesh and blood. Melech basar v'dam, kishi yoytze la milchama. When a king of flesh and blood goes out to battle, to war, yoytze ba'uchlusin, he goes out with throngs, with a lot of, you know, obviously protection and help and all the things that he needs. U'kishi yoytze l'shalim, when he goes out for peace, yoytze b'mi'utim, then he goes out with a few. But Hashem is different. Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yoytze l'milchama. When he goes out to battle, he goes out yechidi by himself. Shenemar Hashem ish milchama. Hashem is the man in singular of war. He doesn't take a whole, you know, all the help along with him. But when he goes to peace, be'uchlesen, he goes with throngs. Shenemar, he quotes the pasuk, as we know, that it says about Matan Torah, Rechev Elikim, Ribay Sayim, Alfei Shinan, actually says in Tehillim, the chariot of Hashem is the myriads of thousands of astute angels, and that's talking about the time when Hashem gave us the Torah. But why is he mentioning war? Which war is he having here? What kind of war is this? What kind of situation is Hashem coming to here? He's obviously going to confront Miriam and Aaron with something really strong. He's not impressed, and we'll see in a minute. Hashem is very not impressed by what they're doing, and therefore, it's a confrontational experience. He's going to come and tell them off. Now, usually, when you come tell somebody off, a lot of us, we want some backup. You know, we don't like to go meet somebody and, you know, like you think about it 1,000 times, and you hash it out, and you say, can you help me? Because we need assistance. Hashem, no, all by himself. Part of it, you see, is an amazing thing. Again, it goes into the whole picture of the whole story. It's that sensitivity. He has to get the job done. Yeah, you have to tell them off, because you have to teach people. But do it in the right way, right? As we know, the way that's going to be the least hurtful, even though, as we just mentioned, he does want the Jewish people to be aware, but of which part? Of the part how Moshe is different. Not necessarily about the part that Hashem is upset with Miriam, you see? So there's two different parts to the story. Okay, let's see. Let's see what happens. Vayikra Aaron and Miriam. But also, the other thing that we see is also because it shows us something else. It's a different thing, not just only of the sensitivity. It's also more that Hashem is so, obviously Hashem is secure, but there's that security in what he's doing. And many times when we have to face something that's negative, we're quite insecure with what we're doing. We're not sure, am I doing the right thing? Am I not doing the right thing? And therefore, what we do is we tend to like to almost share the responsibility. You know, we don't want to take it all on ourselves. Hashem shows us that if we can, and that's what we have to do, look in the mirror and say, this is the right thing to do, just do it. You don't need other people to help you out if you are doing the right thing. So again, Hashem shows us when it comes to confrontation, to war, he doesn't need the approval of others. You see, and it's a very important thing also. We don't always have to seek others' approval. We have to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. That's a very important thing as well. Okay, let's see how he says over here, Vayikra Aaron and Miriam. So who does he call? As we said, he called Aaron and Miriam out. And interesting, it says, there was one important thing that I missed out, I see, on the previous one. I wanted to show you, sorry. It says, Hashem says, Tzu shloshtechem, you three go out. This is very important, interesting. When he called them all out to begin with, to go to the Mishkan, before he came down in the cloud, it says he called them all, and it says an interesting thing. He called all three by name, it says, Moshe, Aaron, Miriam by name, B'dibor echad, in a single utterance, which obviously we can't do, and we can't even imagine, but Hashem can do. Interesting. And he says, Mashi'i efshar lapel laimar, something that's impossible for the human mouth to say, ula'izan l'shmaya, and for the human ear to hear. We can't hear it, we can't say it. But Hashem did it. Why? But why do you have to do that? He doesn't make a miracle for nothing. Why can't he just do one at a time? Maisha, I'm calling you. Aaron, I'm calling you. Miriam, I'm calling you. Why all three together at the same moment? Because remember what he's going to do now. Now he's going to point out that they are all different, right? Well, two are the same and one is different. To highlight how different Moshe is, he calls them all out together. Because you see what happened? Remember when he called them? Who was ready? Only Moshe was ready, right? Because Moshe's always ready. But they were tummy, right? We said. That's why they freaked out. He didn't freak out. So by calling them all at the same time, it highlights how different Moshe is from Aaron and Miriam. They realize it right away. So it's a very interesting thing how he's trying to show. And also, he calls them all at the same time, but the name that's listed first in the pasuk is Moshe. Even though, as we know, he's not the oldest, he's the youngest. Again, showing that you are all three the children of the same parents, but there's a very big difference between Moshe and you and Aaron and Miriam. Highlighting that's very, that's what he wants to show. Okay, let's come back now, I'm sorry, to this one. He says, he called out Aaron and Miriam, and he called them out, so that they would be drawn away from the courtyard of the tabernacle, Likras Hadibur, towards the source of the speech. In other words, Hashem is calling them from outside of the Mishkan because he wants them to separate from Moshe. Moshe will remain in the courtyard, and they will now go outside and hear what Hashem has to say. Okay? Vayetzu Shnehem, so the two of them went out. And then Rashi asks, why? Why does he have to separate them? Why doesn't he just talk to them while they are with Moshe? Umepnei ma mashchan. So we go to the next page. The next page is page 139. And look into first we'll continue in the Rashi. V'hifrishan, he separates them, Mimosha from Moshe. L'fisha aimrim, because ethical conduct requires people to say, miktsas shvachai shaladam. This is something we've already learned previously. We'll see soon where. Only part of a person's praise befanav, in his presence. V'chulai, and if you want to say the whole praise, shalai befanav, not in front of a person. We never overpraise. It's an interesting thing in Torah. We're meant to compliment people, it's true. But we also have to be careful. We find it by Noach, right? It says, Noach ish tzadik. Noach was a tzadik. Tamim haya b'dayreisav. That said about Noach. When Hashem speaks in front of Noach, he only uses the word tzadik and not the word tamim, which is perfect. In other words, a little bit less in front of the person. You don't overpray. So there's a few reasons. One reason is simply because you don't want a person to become overinflated. Their ego shouldn't become overinflated. That's the simple reason given. But also it's quite embarrassing sometimes when you overly praise somebody and the person doesn't know where to put themselves. So there's that, again, that sensitivity to know what's the right way, how you talk about somebody. But over here, Hashem wants to tell them about how great Moshe is, so he's separating them from Moshe Rabbeinu. Very interesting thing. Okay, and then he says another reason why, Davar Acher, why, another reason why, alternatively, why he separates them, Shela Yishman, this is again so incredible, Benizivosai Shel Aaron, Aaron's reprimand. So again,
they spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Miriam speaks to Aaron about Moshe. So it's not a positive thing. And we know who they were. That's obviously why they're held so accountable, because they're incredible people. These are the greatest of the great tzaddikim. And yet when Hashem is confronting them, he's still, again, careful, again, not to embarrass them extra. Only as much as necessary, not any extra. So that Moshe shouldn't hear how Hashem gets upset with Aaron. Hashem separates Aaron. It's again such an important thing we know, and like it's so hard for us sometimes, because sometimes we are confronted with whatever, somebody doing something perhaps that hurts us, and they're in a crowd, and it's we react, because that's how we are, we're people. So we react, and we react right away. But the best thing to do is not to react right away, rather to wait, not only because then we don't respond in anger, but also because who says that everybody else has to hear what you have to say to that person? Maybe it should be done in private. Not maybe, but most probably. And that would be a lot better for that person not to feel that shame. What does a person think, though? A person thinks to themselves, they just embarrassed me, so why do I have to care about their, you know, it's not a matter of tit for tat, but it's just a matter of, why do I have to be sent? They're not sensitive, so where does sensitivity come in here? It has nothing to do with it. You behave, as we see Hashem's model, the best that you can be. What they've done, that doesn't pave the way to how you should behave. So you separate them, and then you tell them what you need to tell them. And that's what Hashem does here. Let's see what happens here. So now, so far, Hashem is still telling them. And now what will Hashem say? I just want to see something, if there was any pasuk missing. No. Okay, so they both go out. Now Hashem, on page 139, you see it says, pasuk vav, vayomer, and he says, shimu na. Interesting. Again, such incredible. What is the word shimu na? You look at the English. What is na in Hebrew? Please, yes, so interesting. He's not happy, right? We'll see, he's really not happy. We'll see in a minute. They did something it wasn't right. They're talking about Moshe, his loyal servant. And Hashem says, please. Again, such an incredible way that he speaks to them, first gently, then gets a bit stronger, but first very gently. So he says, please hear my words. And what are my words? Im yihyen neviachem Hashem, neviachem Hashem b'mare elav. That's how you read it. He says, if there shall be a prophet amongst you, right, as we know, there are prophets, b'mare elav esvada b'chalim adaber b'y. So there's two different parts to this phrase. In a vision shall I make myself known to him. In a dream shall I speak to him. I'll just read the next pasuk. So we're starting to explain how Hashem appears to most prophets or most tzaddikim who get any type of vision or any kind, really prophets, but if you get Ruach HaKodesh. So first of all, he uses the word bimare, which in this context means a bit of an unclear vision, like not a direct, you know, face-to-face meeting. The other thing is a dream. Loi kein avdi Moshe. This is not the case with my servant Moshe. B'chol beisi ne'eman hu, in my entire house, he is trusted. I want to just read the next pasuk, and then we'll see what are the differences between Moshe and all the other prophets. So you can see. First of all, with Moshe Rabbeinu, peh el peh adaber bay. Mouth to mouth I speak to him, right? There's no mare, it's direct. Yes, let's see. Umare v'loy b'chidas. He uses that word mare again, but here it means something different. We'll see in a minute. In a vision and not in riddles. Utmunais Hashem yabit, and at the image of Hashem does he gaze. We know he obviously Moshe can't look at the face of Hashem, only at the back, but it's still the back of Hashem. Umadua lo yireisem ledaber ba'avdi b'Moshe. Why did you not fear to speak about my servant about Moshe? So what is it about Moshe that's different? I just want to share with you simply the four basic differences that are always explained. So it says that all other prophets, when they receive Hashem's word, they receive it, as we said, in a dream, usually at night, or even if it's during the day, they like get into like this sort of slumbering state. You know, we always describe, it almost looks like they're in a trance. You know, that's how most prophets. But Moshe, he could be standing upright and as if he's talking to another human being. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Very different. The other ones, obviously, we know all other prophets had to prepare themselves because they might not be pure, right? Or whatever. Moshe, anytime, day or night, he was always ready. Instant. Hashem could, you know, ring him, he's there. The next one is, they all other prophets fell to the ground because it was so overwhelming, the revelation of Hashem. Moshe could remain upright standing. And the other thing also is that we know that most prophets received their prophecy either via like a malach or like in the form of riddles, as we said, and dreams. And then they had to interpret it. Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said directly what he wanted to say. Clear words. It was, like we say, a conversation between two equals almost, if you want to say, in that direction. So it's so much, no parables, no need for interpretations. It's a whole different world. Mamish a different world. It's you can't even, we can't begin to understand what Moshe experienced, and that Miriam and Aaron didn't realize it either. The word, I just want to share with you one important words that are used by the Chachamim that are quoted often. There's a concept called Aspaklaria Ha-Me'ira and Aspaklaria She'eina Me'ira. Aspaklaria is like a, not a mirror, but it could be like a glass or whatever. So there is sometimes when a person looks through a glass and it's very clean, right? Then you know it's almost as if it doesn't exist, the glass. And you see directly what's on the other side. And that's the vision that Moshe had. Whereas other prophets would see it more like a mirror. And what does a mirror do? First of all, there's a silver coating, so there's a blockage. But you see the reflection of what's behind you, right? So it's not clear, and everything's a bit out of perspective. It's a bit the opposite way around, right? So then you have to think about it and make sense out of what you're seeing to be able to see it properly. So Moshe Rabbeinu had the clearest of the clearest, direct, instant, anytime vision, speaking communication with Hashem, and also remained as he was, which is absolutely incredible. So it's such a different world. And that's what Hashem says. That's why he asks them, why were you not afraid to speak about my servant, Moshe? So right now, you could imagine what they feel like. I just want to see if there's any Rashi here that are important. I mean, they're all important, but yes, as we said, so some of the Rashi is what we said. Okay, I just want to show you one Rashi on page 140. If you look into the middle, it says, Be'avdi b'Moshe, about my servant, about Moshe. I mean, we shouldn't say it that way. We should just say about my servant, Moshe. Why does it say about my servant, about Moshe? So this is interesting. He says, why? Because like this, Eina Aymer Be'avdi Moshe doesn't say about my servant, Moshe, Ela Be'avdi b'Moshe. My servant, about Moshe. Why? Because he says, if you wanted to speak Be'avdi, about my servant, Afal pi she'eino Moshe, even if it wasn't as righteous as Moshe, or bim Moshe, about one who was as righteous as Moshe, even afilu eino avdi, even if he's not my servant, kedai ha'isim li'irei mipanav, you should have been afraid of doing that. It wouldn't have been appropriate. It would have been appropriate for you to be afraid, and you would have stopped. How much more so? So it's just trying to show how, like in a sense, how heavy it is what they did. V'chol shekein shu avdi. Now that he is my servant, for Eved Melech Melech, and the servant of a king is a king, you should have said, Ein HaMelech Oyavaychinam. What should have gone through your mind, even if you didn't know all of this, Hashem says, you should have thought, it is not without good cause that the king loves him. It was obvious that Moshe had a special relationship with Hashem, even if you didn't know all of these other details about his experiences. But nevertheless, it was obvious. And therefore, if Hashem chose Moshe and had this special relationship with Moshe, so for sure, what you should have thought is, if Hashem loves him, there must be a reason. How dare we even think anything negative, and for sure not speak negative. That should have stopped you from speaking the way you did. And as he says, Ein HaMelech Oyav Aychinam, right? It's not without good cause the king loves him. V'im Taimru, and if you were to say, Ein Makir B'maisim, I don't recognize the quality of Moshe's deeds, he says, and that in fact he is not worthy of my love, Zukashem min HaRishayim. This is interesting. So let's just say, this is a hard one. If you see sometimes, you can see it sometimes where, okay, so here, let's say we talk with Moshe, Hashem loves Moshe, but you say, oh, doesn't deserve it. That's even worse. You know why? Because that means you are not trusting Hashem. Because you are saying that Hashem thinks he knows Moshe, but he doesn't really. And if he would really, he wouldn't love him. You know what that means? That's actually interesting because we do that with each other. If we would only know, you know how the Baal Shem Tov says, I mean, it's not just the Baal Shem Tov, I mean, there's a psukim, that every single Jew is like a only child born to Hashem in his old age. Now imagine somebody has a child after many, many years, they've waited, and they finally have a child. I mean, nothing exists. Like, this child can do no wrong, right? It's for sure. The love is on a level beyond. Now, if you criticize that child to the parent, what you're doing is, you are saying, well, you don't have good judgment. You just don't see, right? Sometimes it's true, because we're human beings, so we are blind. But with Hashem, we know, Hashem obviously knows everything. So if Hashem chooses to love every single Jew, who are we to criticize? Who are we to not see that? Now, that doesn't obviously mean that people don't do wrong things. We're not talking about that. But what we should have is also a coding of doing it with love. And we know that that's very different. The very basic difference is we know how we feel about, let's say, our own family, as opposed to how we feel about somebody else. With somebody else, we see it more harshly when somebody does something wrong. When it's somebody we love, we see it less harshly, because the love covers up. So too, that's it. So you understand how Hashem says, and if you didn't think, you think I overestimated Moshe, well then that means you think that I don't see things the right way. That's even worse. How dare that you spoke about Moshe like this? So now, what happens next? Up until now, Hashem had said to Miriam and Aaron, remember he says, listen please, right? So very nice and gently. Let's see the next thing. It now comes a bit more dramatic. So in Pasuk Tes, what does it say? Hashem reacts, you can see, Vayichar af Hashem bam. Hashem gets angry at them, right? It says, and the wrath of Hashem flared up against them. Vayelech, and he left. Interesting. The anger happens after he speaks. So interesting. Again, it's so powerful, but I mean, obviously we understand Hashem can do that, but for us, usually, what happens is first we get angry, and then we start to talk about all the things you've done wrong. Here, first you point out what's wrong, and only then can you allow the emotion to come in. Because if you allow the emotion first, don't talk. It's too late. Then don't talk. Here, and because you see what happens once Hashem gets angry? He leaves. He doesn't stay with them. Then he's gone, right? Then he's not there. But then they're left with the anger of Hashem. And now they have to deal with it. And something very important, I know time goes too fast, I'll just share one thing, even though I'm scared I won't get to it. It's a very important thing, you know, a big question people ask is, did Aaron get punished as well, right? Because he seems to play quite a big role, and yet Miriam's the only one that gets the tzaras. So a lot of the commentaries say, if you look at this pasuk, you can see, who does Hashem get angry at? Both of them. So Aaron also, first of all, the anger of Hashem, that's already a punishment. I mean, for somebody like Aaron, and anybody, we don't want Hashem to be displeased with us, but Aaron, the tzaddik, you know, for sure. But some say, because it says Hashem got angry, then it must have been that he had also tzaras, but only for 1 second, then it disappeared immediately. That's what it seems. That's why the pasuk doesn't enumerate it afterwards. And perhaps the reason is also because you're going to see that Aaron has to be there to help Miriam. So Hashem makes sure that there's somebody around to assist the situation. Because even though he's angry, he loves them, we know. And he holds them in very high esteem. And that we'll see in a minute. So let's see how it goes on. Let's see. So I just want to show you Vayichar and Rashi on that same page. Vayichar af Hashem b'chem v'yilech. So he says, Achar shahidi, I'm right. Me'achar shahidi b'sirchayin. And after he informed them of what they had done wrong, Gozar Haleyem Nidu. Then he decreed punishment upon them, right? Then he separates, right? That's after he tells them what they did wrong. And he says, Kal v'chaymer l'basar adam, all the more so for a person of flesh and blood. Shala yichais al chaveira, you should not display anger towards his fellow man. At sheyedianu srechayne, until he informs him of what he's upset about. Okay, it's not easy, but and as we see, you have to inform them before you get angry. So it's not simple, but or at least while you can still control it, sometimes you have to delay it then and just separate because you can. So that's, yeah, it's an interesting one. So it's a very important one. It's interesting, even though this has nothing specifically to do with the 9 days, but I saw a lot of undertones here because we know that one of the big things in the 9 days is obviously we're mourning the Beis HaMikdash, and one of the big things, the reason of the second destruction was the Sinas Chinam, the hatred of the Jews, they weren't getting along with each other. And it's, you can see from here a few very important points of the relationship that we have with other people, how incredibly important it is, but how important it is that we put so much emphasis on how we're going to do it, right? So you have to think about it. Sometimes what we have to do is think about it while we're not in this situation, so that when we do get into this situation, we can at least try to react properly. And that's why we learned it here in this way. And we learned it again with the greatest of the greatest people, so that we should know that it can happen to all of us. So we have to be very careful. We especially, or just ordinary people, have to be extra, extra careful. Okay, let's see now what happens after. So now we're left with Hashem's anger. And what's the result? The Ha'anon Sar, as you see on page 141, Pasuk Yud, and the cloud moves Me'al Ha'ayel from the top of the tent. V'hine Miriam mitzayras kashaleg. Behold, Miriam, now she has tzaras like snow. As we know, she's full of tzaras. Vayifen Aaron el Miriam, and now Aaron turns to Miriam. V'hine mitzayras, and she see and he sees it. It's interesting how it's so, the Pasuk is so dramatic. They obviously weren't looking at each other, right? Hashem had just left them, right? And Aaron was obviously stunned because of the anger of Hashem, as we said. Even if he didn't get tzaras, even if you hold that, he was still not in Hashem's good book. Hashem was angry at him, right? So he's stunned. But then he looks up and he turns around and he sees Miriam and she has tzaras. And what does Aaron do immediately? And this is also such an important lesson. Because Aaron's also not in such a good state at this moment. You could imagine, how Aaron feels. He must feel devastated, so low. You know, a lot of times when we feel low, when we feel like we've done something wrong, sometimes what it does is it paralyzes us. Usually that's what it does. And we don't feel, not only don't we feel that we can help ourselves, but we don't feel empowered to help another, right? Who am I? I can't do it, and I'm not even worthy or whatever. We just don't even feel. We're just too overwhelmed with our own shame and with our own blame and with our own guilt and whatever it may be. Look at Aaron instant. He sees Miriam and he's galvanized to action. He's not letting her suffer. He wants to make sure to alleviate her pain. It's amazing. Okay, Aaron, we know Aaron is Isha Chesed, but still, amazing, amazing thing that immediately he's able to remove himself from his own and concentrate, what are we going to do about Miriam? So what does he do right away? Vayomer Aaron el Moshe. Immediately he turns to Moshe. Be adayni. I beg you, my Lord. Al na tashe salenu chatas asher noyalnu vasher chatanu. These words sound a bit familiar to you. Yom Kippur, we say a lot of times, very similar words. These words quoted from this pasuk. And what does Aaron say? I beg you, do not cast a sin upon us, for we have been foolish and we have sinned. So interesting how it's so amazing. Aaron's the older brother, you know, and he's immediately realized, also that's another thing. You do something wrong, somebody tells you, so it takes time. Sometimes, like right away where, you know, our defense goes up, you know, and we, oh, I didn't mean it so bad, and only sometimes after a few, you know, we think about it and we're a bit not so hurt, then we can say maybe they have a point and, you know, they made a mistake. No, straight away, Aaron, we made a big mistake here. We did something we shouldn't have done. And he's humble, like Moshe was even more humble, but Aaron's also humble. Enough humility to approach Moshe. But also, think about what this sheds the light on who Moshe is. They had just spoken about Moshe. Why are they in this state? And who does he turn to? And he doesn't even hesitate. Because what does he obviously know? What's Moshe going to do? He's immediately going to help them. There isn't even a hesitation in Aaron. He's not worried one drop, not worried at all, that Moshe is going to take this personally and say, well, I can't help you. Go to God, whatever, find some other. Nothing like that. Incredible. These are incredible people. But the point is how much we have to learn from it. How much we have to try and put ourselves aside. And if somebody does hurt us, and then they come to us and say, please forgive me, or you plead on behalf of somebody else, try to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. We have to learn. not like Aaron, and not to be, you know, to be that kind of person that people are ready to approach. You see, that's even more. It's not only that people, after they approach you, the fact is that people know about you, that you don't bear the grudge, that you are approachable, that you are ready to hear. And that's a big thing. So you see right away, he goes and he says, but he admits they made a big mistake. Let me see Rashi how he says. As he says, also beautiful. This is such a beautiful Rashi on Yud. It says that cloud had departed, and then afterwards Miriam was at Saras. So Rashi says, Mashal Melech, it can be compared to a king, Sha'amar le pedagog, so he says to the teacher, Ridei Espini, punish my son harshly. Avaloi terdenu, but do not punish him harshly. At She'eilech me'etzlecha, until I leave you. Sheracha my Allah, because I have pity on him. So another interesting thing we see about the way Hashem is, that Hashem doesn't, even though they did such a wrong thing, and he points it out to them, he doesn't like to see them suffering. I mean, obviously Hashem sees everything. But in that level, it's such a beautiful lesson also for us, that magnificent, again, the love that continues in the whole situation. It doesn't, there's no change in the love. You did something wrong, you have to be pointed out. You have to be punished, all fine. But the love is underlying everything. And Hashem couldn't bear it, couldn't bear the pain, so he departs. And now Miriam is left with Aaron, as we said. And what does Rashi say? Oh, no, Alnu is interesting, for we have been foolish, as we said, the word evil, a fool, because we know that nobody sins unless they act foolishly, because a person who uses their seichel will not sin, because the seichel tells you, you don't want to be separate from God even for 1 second. So why would you do something wrong? It's only when we're acting irrationally that a Jew sins. That's what it explains, right? Ein adam chayte ela shenichnas by ruach shtus, right? Only when a person is foolish. Then he says, the next pasuk is a hard pasuk. So I'll just, it's hard to translate, but I'll read it to you and we'll see the explanation. He says, and then he continues, Aaron speaking to Moshe, Alna tehi kames, do not, okay, so let's use their translation, the article, even though it's not exact. But he says, let her, even though it doesn't say her in the pasuk, you see, it's a euphemism. He's saying, it, obviously he means Miriam. So let her not be like a corpse. Why should she be, why is he mentioning a corpse? She's not dead. But what do we know about Tsaras? It says that somebody who has leprosy, Tsaras, is like dead. That's what it says in the Torah, right? They're so impure, and it's a concept of being disconnected from Hashem. So it's a concept of similar to death. And that's why he says to Moshe Rabbeinu, let her not be like dead. Asher b'tseisai me'rechen imai, because of its emerging from its mother's womb. Interesting, what does it mean from its mother? From our mother's womb. She's our sister. She came out of the same womb as us, right? Ve'ye'achel chatzi b'sarai, has half of its flesh consumed. What is he saying? Strange pasuk. Very, very graphic, but I'll show you. You have to see how Rashi explains it. So first of all, as we said, a corpse is because somebody has tsaras is like that, right? Then he says, asher b'tseisai mirechen imai. First of all, he should have said our mother, but he doesn't, because obviously it's the same mother. But he says, the verse speaks euphemistically, and then he says, Bisareinu, it should have also said, but it doesn't say that. So what is he saying, though? He says, because she emerged from our mother's womb, she is to us as if half of our own flesh has been consumed. Another beautiful lesson of how much we have to be there for each other, for our family. Very interesting. Person has to be there. Here specifically, it's sisters, brothers, but family, and all Jews extendedly are family. But we have to look at it, when one person is suffering, it's us, it's half of us. It's not something distinctly separate from us, you see? And he says, very beautiful. So he says like this, and why? So Rashi says, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And accordingly, as he says, so the simple way he says, it is improper for a brother to allow a sister to be like a corpse, right? So step in, do something. Make sure that she gets cured. And then he says, Asher b'tseisai, me'achar shiyatza, since this one, this sibling came out of the mother's womb. So right, so therefore, if the one who has the ability to help, the one who's capable of helping, doesn't help, right? Then it's as if half as of the flesh has been eaten, for his brother who suffers is his flesh. Okay, similar idea, but we can see over here that Aaron is saying to Moshe, she's our sister, What are you going to do? Look at her. Look at her. She's suffering. And what does... And then he says another... Rashi gives another way to explain it. This is also very interesting. Just taking the story a little bit more into the story form. So now Miriam has tzaras. You know the halachas of tzaras are that in order for somebody actually to be called a mitzayra, to have the status of mitzayra, the kohen has to say it. Without the kohen saying, you are a mitzayra, you are not a mitzayra yet. Once the kohen declares the status, then you become a mitzayra, then you have to separate and do whatever you have to do and go through the whole purification process, wait the 7 days out of the camp and then do that, right? That's one thing. And also, the only one that can declare you pure is also the kohen. So you need the kohen to declare you impure and the kohen to declare you pure afterwards. Now, we have a very big problem over here in this story. Because the only kohanim at the moment is Aaron and maybe his two sons, and they are related. And a kohen who's related can't do the job. So now, Miriam is in a no man's land. This is big trouble. That's what Aaron, well, in a certain way we can say she doesn't really have tzaras, because Aaron didn't declare it. And it's true, there was a loophole here. And Hashem knew that. So in a way, which is less, but doesn't matter, no loopholes, they're not looking for loopholes. Miriam is accepting the punishment, so to speak. She did something wrong. She spoke Lashon Hara, and we know what happens when you speak Lashon Hara, you get tzaras. And this is what she wants to demonstrate to everybody else as well. So now Aaron says to Moshe, we're in trouble here. Because I can't help her. And that's also why he's so desperate. And he cries out to Moshe, you are the only one that can help her. How? By davening to Hashem. That's the only help here. Only Hashem can step in and take care of the situation. Because there's no human being that's capable of doing it here. Because I'm the Kayin, but I'm related. Such an incredible story. So you see here, that's what happens. It's like, it's quite dramatic. And that's why he says to her, let her not be like a corpse. If you will not cure her through your prayer, that's what Aaron says to Moshe, who will quarantine her, right? So in other words, who will make her impure and who will purify her? It is impossible for me to examine her in my role as a kohen, because I'm a relative, and a relative may not examine afflictions of tzaras, and there's no other kohen in the world, okay? Big problem. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do immediately? Vayitzak Moshe el Hashem. No, he doesn't hesitate for a moment. Moshe Rabbeinu cries out to Hashem, and what does he say? These are very famous words. This is, must be the shortest prayer that we've ever heard. He gives a very abbreviated, powerful prayer for Miriam. Lamar, and why does he say Lamar? Usually Lamar is to repeat, because he actually says to Hashem, I want you to respond to me. Tell me that you are going to cure her. It's almost like a chutzpah, but that's how Moshe, it's amazing. Kel na refonava. Please, Hashem, heal her now. It's such a powerful way of speaking. Okay, he says, please. Rashi tells us right away, shows us, if you're asking somebody a request, you got to be polite, even when you're desperate, right? You have to say, please, and address with like nice things. Kel is the name of Hashem of Chesed. And na again, because he again is beseeching Hashem. Refonava. Interesting. Heal her now. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted a miracle, and actually what he really asked Hashem was that she shouldn't even have to wait the 7 days. That's what he wanted. But Hashem says to her, no, I can't do that. Because really, Miriam should have had 14 days. Because for a human being, if you insult, that's the next pasuk time. I saw so many other beautiful things. Okay, anyways, I shouldn't rush. That's what we still have next week, right? But
so many lessons in.
And it's just incredible, but okay. I'm just gonna see something. I guess I'll just read it out. So let's do it properly. Okay, so Rashi says, Kel na refan Allah. So the first one, we said that the person who's asking has to ask with two or three words of supplication and only present their request, as we say. That's why he says, in a sense, almost Kel na, Hashem please, you know, and saying Hashem is the master of the world. Then he says like this, Lamar, as we said, because he wanted a response immediately from Hashem. And then he asks like this, this Rashi attack I can tell you orally. It says that Rashi tells us that there are actually other places where Moshe Rabbeinu also asks for an immediate response. The most famous being, interestingly, first of all, when Hashem chose him And then Moshe says, oh, the Jewish people are not going to listen to me. Hashem says, they'll listen to you. And he says, Paro won't listen to me. Hashem says, no, he will listen to you. So there, Hashem responds to Moshe Rabbeinu's doubt right away. In another place we have where, in that context also that Hashem will redeem them. But the other one is also when he asks for help, to appoint other people. And Hashem says, yes, you're going to appoint. And we say Yeshua, but the third one, the most famous one, is when Moshe Rabbeinu begs, that's next week's parasha, begs Hashem to go into Eretz Yisrael, right? Ve'eschanan. That's quite a sad thing, and Hashem doesn't say yes, but Hashem responds immediately. He says no, but he responds, right? So Hashem gives him a response, he knows what's happening. And same thing over here, Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem to please respond and tell me, what are you, and obviously with the response, what he wants is that Hashem should heal Miriam. But Hashem says, yeah, okay, there's so many beautiful things on this pasuk, and I wanted to see if there was any other thing before I leave you today, and we'll do the last pasuk next week. Share, just one thing. Sorry, let me just see one thing, because we've already read those pasukim. I wanted to show you one nice thing here. Bye. I guess we'll do some of that next week, but okay, just one small thing I'll just share with you, and then next week we'll do all the other. I feel bad because it's not going to be done properly, but just as we saw quite a few lessons, but as we're saying, we are in the 9 days, but just something very important that we think it's one in the Nusach Ari Siddur, but it's also in the Art Scroll Siddur, right? So it's also in the Ashkenaz. There's something which we call the Sheish Schiris, the six remembrances. Most people don't have accustomed to actually say it, but we do after davening, just after Aleinu, but it is in your Siddur as well. And what they are things that people are meant to remember every single day. And amongst which is Amalek. You have to remember what Amalek did. You have to remember Hashem gave us the Torah at Har Sinai. You have to remember Shabbos, Zachar Asiyam HaShabbos, because that's the creation of the world. And that's why in Hebrew, the names of the week don't have names. They're called Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni. That's how we remember that we're counting always to Shabbos. Amongst them is, remember what happened to Miriam in the desert. Could you imagine? Every single day, we have to remember what poor Miriam did, and that she got punished and got tzaras because she spoke Lashon Hara about her brother. Now that's quite a harsh one. I think, why should we, so of all the things that Miriam did in her life, my gosh, what she did in her life and how she was so dedicated, and here we're picking this out for us to remember. So first of all, on a simple level, we understand the idea is not to shame Miriam. The idea is for us that if Miriam the Tzadekis, who spoke to her brother privately about her brother, who she cared and loved, and did it totally with sincerity, and still she's held to such account, how much more so should we measure our words when we are not speaking with such positive intention, and it's not somebody we really love completely, and we are not the greatest of people in that sense. We have we have faults of our own, and we could be subjective. So that's part of it. That's why it's in that way, so to show us how really careful we really have to be. But another thing also, obviously there is something positive about Miriam, and you can see something amazing. What did Miriam want? Miriam was so worried about the Shalom Bayis, right? About poor Tzipora and how Moshe Rabbeinu was separated. Again, showing us the value and the importance of Shalom, of peace. That's what drove her. And for that, she actually engaged in something negative, but because she couldn't hold herself back. So you see, in a sense, it's not all negative at all, because we wouldn't do something to shame Miriam. Her drive was such a good one, but still, even with peace, so we have to be careful. You have to measure and weigh up what you're doing. Is it correct? But the drive should be there. So what should be our drive? What should be pulling us constantly? That what should we be looking out for each other, for each other's welfare? And if we see somebody who's having a difficult time and it looks like they're being targeted in the wrong way, don't stand aside, right? Feel for them, but then obviously you have to analyze how you're going to deal with it. So Miriam meant well, but she didn't end up doing the right thing at the end, but she meant well, and her emotion wasn't wrong. The fact that she cared about Tzipora, that wasn't wrong. And the fact that she, but at the end she did something wrong. again, it brings home how careful we have to really be with ourselves, because we are not even Miriam. So just that's a very important lesson for us this week, especially as we're leading up to Tisha B'Av. And then we say, Yemirtz Hashem, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, which, please God, before Tisha B'Av, things will be clearer. Now things are so muddy. So that's why also we can tend to do it, to say the wrong thing, to insult and to be insulted and to feel hurt, because things are so muddy and there's no clarity. But Emirtz Hashem, when Hashem will reveal himself and there'll be a Beis HaMikdash, things will be so much clearer, and that's what we're hoping for. But in the meantime, let's prepare ourselves for that. And how we prepare ourselves is by, yes, looking at things in a more clear way through the vision of Torah, and through learning, and then therefore asking ourselves if what we are doing is correct. Always asking, not reacting immediately. Just pause and reflect and think about Miriam and say, okay, well, even she meant well, so is it really correct? So it's a very important lesson. I'm going to leave it there, but next week we'll see. We'll do the, I feel bad we didn't finish. I thought we would.